you know what the Stonewall riots were about?
I've never heard anything about it.
The disorders began with a routine police raid on a homosexual bar.
Gonna be a long, hot summer from now on.
I never have read about it, what exactly happened there, and the purpose of it.
No, I don't know nothing about it.
Are you ready for a story?
Yeah, yeah.
The story of our past.
At last.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Australian feds get territorial over civil unions, high-profile bashers are busted in three countries, and why we party with pride. All that, more news, and a big hello to our new online listeners at outinamerica.com as you discover This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 17, 2006. We reported last week about the Australian federal government's intention to disallow the newly enacted civil unions law in the Australian Capital Territory, or ACT, which includes the nation's capital, Canberra. Much like the U.S. Congress can override laws passed by the Washington, D.C. City Council. It was a race to see if the ACT's move to fast-track the process would permit any gay and lesbian couples to civilly unite under the territory's new law before the government of Prime Minister John Howard could stop them. Governor General Michael Jeffrey ignored pleas from ACT government officials and decided to back the federal government, officially overturning the territory's Civil Unions Act late this week after meeting with Attorney General Philip Ruddock. Except for the territory's Liberal Party senator's vote against his own government, the first time that's happened since Howard took office 10 years ago, the tally to disallow the Governor General's disallowance was otherwise along party lines. While the Labor-led opposition was unable to muster a majority, the final Senate vote was a razor-thin 32-30 to uphold the federal override. "There are issues that remain responsibilities of the Commonwealth, and marriage is one of them," said Ruddock. He accused the territory's government of intentionally crafting the Civil Unions Act to make it as close as possible to marriage. But ACT Attorney General Simon Corbell called the federal government's intervention homophobic, arrogant, and undemocratic. "We made 63 amendments in response to the Commonwealth's initial complaint," he said. But Mr. Ruddock refused last week to identify which clauses remained unacceptable. Corbell promised new legislation for same-gender couples in the ACT, saying, "It's still our intention to give the same level of recognition provided for in the Civil Unions Act."
A British lesbian couple legally married in Canada has argued for full legal recognition of their marriage in Britain's High Court. Sue Wilkinson and Celia Kitzinger, two university professors who married almost 3 years ago in British Columbia, cited the Human Rights Act in their lawsuit, which prohibits discrimination and guarantees the right to privacy and family life. They call it insulting and discriminatory to be offered the lesser status of a civil partnership under new UK legislation passed late last year. Sir Mark Potter of the High Court's Family Division presided over the three-day hearing and said it may be a few weeks before he issues a ruling. Other foreign national same-gender couples married in Canada are demanding legal recognition of their marriages, with lawsuits pending in Ireland, Israel, New Zealand, and Hong Kong.
A Ugandan lesbian living in the UK was sent back to Entebbe this week after being told by a British immigration judge that she was not entitled to asylum because lesbians are not homosexuals and that only gay men in Uganda face persecution. When Elizabeth Muwezi lived in Uganda, according to the British rights group Outrage, she was kidnapped from her home soon after visiting an underground gay club and held for 5 months at a so-called safe house where she was raped and beaten. Before she was deported, Muwezi said in a statement, "I fled to the UK hoping for protection. I am terrified of what will happen to me."
7 men in Cameroon, whose offense was being at a gay-friendly nightclub in the capital city of Yaoundé last year, have been retried and found guilty of sodomy, according to a report issued this week by the San Francisco-based International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, or IGLHRC. They were each sentenced to 10-month jail terms. 2 others were acquitted. The men have been locked up since their arrests in May 2005, so the rights group hopes they'll be released soon for time served. 11 men had been incarcerated following the raid. Two of them were released shortly before the original trial began in April. The remaining 9 were acquitted by a reluctant trial court judge because a disorganized prosecution failed to present any witnesses, but Cameroon authorities ordered a retrial. Homosexuality per se is not a crime in the West African nation, and a sodomy conviction requires being apprehended or witnessed in the act. One wonders on what basis the convictions were made, said Eaglehurk Executive Director Paula Edelbrick, as there was no evidence presented by the prosecution of the commission of sodomy. Though they may be leaving prison, they do so under a cloud and with their lives in tatters. Anti-queer hostility in Cameroon has escalated since 3 tabloids published sensationalized front-page lists earlier this year of high-profile citizens they claimed are gay.
But Hawaii will be dishing out $625,000 to settle a federal civil rights lawsuit filed by the American Civil Liberties Union against the U.S. state's youth correctional facility. A judge agreed in February that the lockup was in a state of chaos, characterized by dangerous and pervasive harassment against LGBT youth. He cited threats of violence, physical and sexual assault, imposed social isolation, and near-constant use of homophobic slurs in his ruling. The ACLU sued on behalf of 3 wards, a transgender 17-year-old girl, an 18-year-old lesbian, and an 18-year-old young man perceived to be gay. Part of the settlement, to be split among the plaintiffs and their lawyers, will pay for a court-ordered consultant to help draft new policies, train staffers, and set up a grievance system at the facility. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender young people are often abandoned by their families and end up on the streets, said Lois Perrin, legal director of the ACLU Hawaii. Those who end up in state care should be rehabilitated, nurtured, and fostered, whether they're gay or straight, she added, not singled out for cruelty and mistreatment because of who they are.
2 presumably heterosexual men in England were sentenced to life in prison this week after earlier pleading guilty to the brutal bashing death of popular gay bar manager Jody Dobrowski. Shouting anti-gay slurs, Thomas Pickford and Scott Walker ferociously beat the 24-year-old Dobrowski to a pulp last October as he walked through London's Clapham Common after spending an evening with friends. The assault disfigured him so badly that fingerprinting was required to make a positive identification of the body. The judge said that under the terms of his sentences, the 2 men will each spend at least 28 years behind bars. Sherry Dobrowski called her son's death an act of terrorism. In a free and democratic society, the family said in a statement, Jody's murder was an outrage.
4 young men in New York City each face up to 25 years in prison for their vicious, hate-fueled beating of well-known performer Kevin Aviance during the early morning hours of June 10th. Ranging in age from 16 to 20, they were charged this week with first-degree gang assault and first-degree assault as a hate crime. According to felony complaints filed by prosecutors, the 4 followed Aviance as he walked through the East Village, yelling anti-gay epithets before surrounding and beating him. He suffered a broken jaw, a bruised knee, and other injuries. Aviance is recovering following surgery and 2 days in the hospital, his leg in a brace and his jaw wired shut, but he vows to sing as scheduled on the New York City Pride Day stage later this month. Aviance, who performs in drag, topped the Billboard dance music charts in 2002 and 2004 with his songs Give It Up and Alive. If nothing else, he said in a statement about the attack, I hope it brings more awareness.
The main suspect in the brutal assault on 2 gay U.S. broadcast journalists vacationing in April on the Caribbean island of San Martin surrendered to police this week. The man, identified only as Duracell, has denied beating CBS employees Dick Jefferson and Ryan Smith with a tire iron during the attack. But according to a report by the Associated Press, 3 others already arrested for participating in the crime have made statements to police naming him as the primary assailant. Under San Martin law, the names of suspects are not released until trial. The beatings occurred in the Dutch portion of San Martin, but the 4 suspects were living on the island's French side, reportedly making their arrests more difficult. Smith suffered the more serious injuries of the 2 men. He required brain surgery, and a portion of his shattered skull had to be replaced with a titanium plate. He told the Miami Herald that news of the latest arrest was wonderful, saying, "What we all wanted was for this crime not to go unpunished."
And finally, in case you're wondering how Mary Cheney's new book is doing, the U.S. Vice President's much maligned lesbian daughter and Bush apologist would be well advised to take the money and run. According to a story in The Advocate, despite wide media coverage when it was published in May, Now It's My Turn has bombed at the bookstores. Nielsen BookScan reports that Mary's memoir has attracted barely 6,000 buyers. Sales dropped in each of the 4 weeks following its release, with a paltry 574 copies purchased during the week ending June 3rd. At that rate, publisher Simon & Schuster will never come close to recouping the reported $1 million advance it paid Cheney for the book.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 17, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out, the Gay and Lesbian International News Magazine.
Thank you.
That was without cue cards, people.
Pride, pride, gotta have pride. We've been around too long to keep it inside. Pride, can't sit back and watch from the side. Pride is power, and power is pride. It's time to celebrate. All the colors of the rainbow, get out into the streets, follow the tide. Pride.
Between 2.5 and 3 million people clogged downtown Sao Paulo, Brazil on June 17th for what was probably the largest LGBT pride parade on the planet. It's that time of year, of course, but such public displays were unthinkable before the last weekend of June in 1969. It was illegal to serve alcohol to homosexuals or for two men to dance together in many cities then. Lesbian gay bars were often run by organized crime, drink prices were inflated, and police raids and subsequent public ruination were routine. All that changed when the queer patrons of the Stonewall Inn on Christopher Street in New York City's Greenwich Village finally had enough.
I ain't sorry, I ain't sad, for all the years I've been had, strutting around like a heavy duty
pup.
And festivals celebrating gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender pride are now held in cities all over the world practically all year round, but the tradition was born in June. Unfortunately, it's not surprising to discover that many people, even those who come out to enjoy the celebrations, don't know what event they're commemorating.
Do you know what the Stonewall riots were about?
I never have read about it. What exactly happened there and the purpose of it?
I've never heard anything about it. No, I don't know nothing about it.
So just what is this party all about? The significance of June 27, 1969 must be seen against the backdrop of life before that. A poem by Judy Gron from the classic Lesbian Concentrate album gives you some idea.
A history of lesbianism. How they came into the world, the women loving women came in 3 by 3 and 4 by 4. The women loving women came in 10 by 10 and 10 by 10 again, until there were more than you could count. How they lived in the world, the women-loving women learned as much as they were allowed, and walked and wore their clothes the way they liked, whenever they could. They did whatever they knew to be happy or free, and worked and worked and worked. The women-loving women in America were called dykes, and some liked it, and some did not. They made love to each other the best they knew how, and for the best reasons. How they went out of the world, the women-loving women went out one by one, having withstood greater and lesser trials and much hatred from other people, They went out one by one, each having tried in her own way to overthrow the rule of men over women. They tried it one by one, and hundred by hundred, until each came in her own way to the end of her life and died. The subject of lesbianism is very ordinary. It's the question of male domination that makes everybody angry.
By the late 1960s, the anger of lesbians and gays was straining the locks on the closet doors, but something still held them back. This discussion was recorded at Pacifica Radio New York just 6 months before the historic event.
This is the New Symposium, a program from and for the homosexual community. I'm Baird Searles, and also on hand,
Kermit Lamb. I have felt, and I think I've changed even my thinking on this in the last 3 or 4 years, is that homosexuals aren't proud enough to be homosexuals and get out and you know, be militant a little bit and say I am, and a little like I'm glad to see now in the racial thing that Negroes now aren't just trying to get along like everybody else. They've seen beauty in their own blackness.
Yeah.
Black is beautiful.
It bears on what you're saying about being proud of homosexual, which I think even at now is a little much to ask of most people, but just being open about it. Since doing this program, and kind of because of doing this program and trying to find people to do this program back at the beginning, it has come so sharply to my attention the total lack of courage that the homosexual community has. And I know the reasons, damn it, and I've been through it myself. I think that is one thing you can really pin on all of you out there is cowardice. I know I'm going to get letters saying, okay, it's easy for you. You're not going to get fired from the station. But it hasn't been that easy. The feeling that I've totally lost contact with my father because of this program. Mm. And I know that people's lives can be ruined if they open up and reveal themselves. On an idealistic plane, we all know that if every homosexual said what he was tomorrow, that the whole situation would be changed for the better. Now, this is obviously a pipe dream. But for every homosexual that does open up and reveal himself, there are that many more people that realize that homosexuals are real, breathing human beings. They are not sex maniacs or freaks. That many more young people that are given the fact that a homosexual life needn't be a disaster.
I know a number of people who are under 25, say, under 20. They all seem to be much more relaxed. I hope it's a sign.
I don't know. So do I.
There's a certain feeling among many younger people of not caring who knows. They have straight friends who know, and I hope this is sort of indicative of something.
June 27th, 1969, as recalled in Brett Artery's 1970 documentary.
The disorders began with a routine police raid on a homosexual bar, the Stonewall, on Christopher Street. Almost every homosexual who was in New York at the time of the Stonewall Rebellion has his own private memory of what took place. One of the longtime leaders of the gay rights movement, Craig Rodwell, remembers it this way.
The first night was Friday. I was on the way home from a friend's house. The raid was just starting at that time, and we noticed the crowd. We went over there, and a crowd was gathering out in front. There was a paddy wagon pulled up and a few people being taken out. It started with those few coins and pebbles being thrown at the police, and then the police retreated into the Stonewall. And then after the police barricaded themselves inside, it was like half an hour later, the riot police started moving up Christopher, breaking up the crowd, which had really become a very angry crowd with hundreds of bottles and rocks. There wasn't one window left in the whole place after about 10 minutes. And they broke the crowd up into small groups, and this went on for like 2 or 3 hours back and forth in the whole area. I think they thought the people would just go home or run, especially since they were gay people. They're not used to gay people standing up at all, especially in front of police. But they would chase people away, and they would go around the block and come in another way. And this sort of tug of war went on all evening. And then on Saturday night, it was much the same thing. Starting about 9, crowds started to gather in the area. And then around 11 or 12, they started taking over the street, stopping cars and coming through, unless there were gay people in them. A few fires were set. But generally, there's an angry mood, a lot of chanting, a lot of hand-holding. a lot of assertion of being gay. It was a way of saying we're tired of hiding, tired of leading two lives, tired of denying our basic identity, denying ourselves. Newfound pride, really, a collective pride in their identity.
Another important outgrowth of the riots was the formation of numerous action-oriented homosexual groups in New York and around the country. They're composed for the most part of younger and more militant homosexuals.
It still is a relatively small minority of gay people who do reflect this new spirit, whatever you want to call it. I think it's going to infect the masses of gay people in the coming years.
Gay power is here to stay, and nobody is going to ignore us any longer.
Hey Joe, get up and go. Wouldn't like to tell you twice. Hey Mac, get up and back. Didn't ask your advice. There's too much heat out in the street, telling us to move along. Gonna be a long, hot summer.
This is Gabrielle Antolovich reporting from West Hollywood for This Way Out. Do you know what the Stonewall riots were about?
I know a little bit about them.
What do you know?
Oh, some cops came into a bar and some Long Beach cops and
New York.
Okay. Well, anyway, whatever city. But anyway, they came into the bar and they were trying to break up the gays or whatever. And then the gays kicked their butt. That's what I heard.
I just heard like a whole bunch of drag queens just sort of like, you know, barricaded the whole half of the city and just, you know, took over for about a few days.
You know that it wasn't just drag queens, it was leather boys and lesbians and people of color, too.
Yeah.
You know anything about the Stonewall riots?
I don't know a thing about them.
Well, what's the gay parade about?
I guess to celebrate the gay life.
Where you can touch in public and it doesn't, I guess, offend anybody, or you can just be yourself. You know that it's a yearly event to commemorate the Stonewall riots that happened in New York.
No! Did you know that?
No, I knew it was Stonewall, but I didn't know why they called it that.
Maybe I don't know enough about my culture. We'll
too far. This time they pushed too far. Their mission was to punish sin. They met a surprise at the Stonewall Inn.
Gay history rap. Stonewall Inn was a sleazy place. To get in, they had to know your face. Reason was mighty clear. You couldn't run a bar for queers. Prices inside were double. We paid them cause we didn't want trouble. Something was brewing inside. Faggots, dykes, feeling pride. Stage was set, people in place. Cops and queers face to face.
History rap! First three arrested were in drag, but these were not cringing fags. And a crowd gathered, seeing the scene, shouted support to those three queens. Through the door came one more queer, stocky little woman who knew no fear. Screaming, kicking, punching pigs. Crowd gave a yell cause she wasn't too big. Running and hiding was a thing of the past when this tough dyke started kicking ass. History sprung on closet doors. History rap.
No more worries. The shrinks say we're not crazy. The tool says we are healthy.
All right. All
right. Now that the nation has swung to the right and more people have seen the light.
Maybe I don't know enough about my culture.
Sex and discos instead of rights.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Lucia Chappell, Rex Wachner, Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, and Gabrielle Antolovich contributed program material. You heard music by John Gilbert Levitt, the Berkeley Women's Music Collective, the Tom Robinson Band, and Age of Consent. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can now listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Log on to our website to see how you can help keep this program on the air. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WREK Atlanta, Georgia, 2BBB Bellingen, New South Wales, KBRP Bisbee, Arizona, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.